Since we're moving from the abstract to the concrete, I'm supposed to be abstract. Actually, I think I'm not going to talk about the right to the city. I've written a paper on the right to the city. It's just been published in New Left Review. You can also get it off my website, davidharvey.org, and I also think it's available through the conference website, too. I really wanted to talk about something else for 15 minutes and answer one of the questions that came up last night, but which has also come up with respect to that paper, which is the question of how do we get from here to there? And on that, I thought I'd give a little anecdote, which is maybe a bit concrete, but you have to forgive me. I was asked to chair a jury that was selecting designs and ideas for a new city to be built in South Korea. And I still don't know quite how I got on it and all the rest of it, but I did. And I found it extremely interesting. And we had all these designs, and we had a preliminary discussion on the criteria we should utilize to evaluate these designs. And the jury was mainly made up of planners, some engineers, and a couple of eminent architects, urbanists, Winnie Maas from Holland and Isozaki from Japan. And the discussion pretty soon got into a very interesting discussion about the relative strengths of squares and circles in accommodating urban development, but also in expressing something symbolic about the world. And this went on for about 20 minutes, and then I said, being the only social scientist there, I said, well, I thought there was another way to go, and we should think about it in another kind of way. I said, I thought there were six criteria we should be looking at, six questions we should be asking. And the first question we should ask about this city is, what kind of relation to nature is being proposed here? And how should we understand that relation to nature, which would include symbolic questions as well as questions about carbon footprints and all the rest of it, but also the internal kind of questions about waste disposal and water supply, all those sorts of things, the metabolic relation to nature. I thought that was a terribly important issue. The second, I said, well, I think we should be looking at what kinds of technologies are we going to embed in this urban environment, and what kind of household technologies, what kinds of communication and transport technologies. So there's a whole kind of technological dimension that we should be thinking about, and that was not independent, obviously, of the relation to nature question. The third question we should be looking at is, what kind of social relations were we going to envisage in this city? And how would we think about the organization of the city in relationship to social relations? The unfortunate thing about this city was it was going to be essentially a city which is going to be occupied mainly by the back offices of the main ministries of the government and a lot of research institutions. And it seemed to me immediately, if you're going to talk about a city that's made up of bureaucratic scientific intelligentsia, it's going to be a terribly boring place unless you can do something, you know, really dramatic to sort of hide all those ministries so you couldn't see them. And do something else with the city. So that kind of social relations question was a very big question. The fourth question was, well, what kind of production systems are there going to be here? What is going to be produced here? And to the degree it was going to be an administrative center, there were all sorts of ancillary production systems that you could insert in there, everything from printing to, you know, since bureaucratic organizations produce a hell of a lot of waste paper, then obviously there should be a waste paper recycling plant in the place, you know, things like that. So the production side was terribly important. And then there was the issue that came after that, which is, well, what would daily life be like? What would the world of reproduction of daily life and how reproduction of social relations occurred on the street and the education and the gender relations, all those sorts of issues, and household embeddedness in urbanism? So there was that kind of question. And the last question, which is very important to me and which I do take up some in the Right to the City paper, is, what kind of mental conceptions arise out of the experience of living in this kind of urban environment? And I think ever since Zimmel wrote that fantastic piece about the metropolis and mental life, I think that whole kind of question of the politics and the political subjectivities get associated with certain kinds of styles of urban living. I mean, the suburbanization of the United States has had a disastrous impact. And what kind of mental conceptions were going to be there about, for example, even the notion of rights? For instance, one of the questions which it seems to me we should really try to confront, and Peter mentioned this last night, is the fact that the right to the city in many countries is now closely associated with the ideas of private property rights. And that association is extremely strong, and it's mentally so deeply embedded that there has to be a huge struggle to get people to think that actually they could have a right to the city without necessarily having private property rights. And, you know, those kinds of things crop up. So I said we should discuss these criteria, and we did for about 20 minutes, and people were kind of interested. And then Isozaki says, well, there's only one of these criteria that really matters, and that's the mental conceptions. And of the mental conceptions, the symbolic dimension is all that really matters, and that brings us back to squares and circles. So we went back to talk about squares and circles again, you know, so it was kind of very interesting. Later that evening at dinner, there was a sort of general discussion between the panelists around the table, and at some point, or I can't remember who it was, I think it was Winnie Mass, who kind of said, you know, what you talked about was really interesting. Have you written it up? It must be, you know, where did you get it from? It's such a really interesting way to look about, think about how a city should be and how the dynamics of a city should work. And I made the great mistake, and I said, well, what I should never have said, but I often do say, I said, well, actually, it's not my idea at all. I said, you can find it all. It's in footnote 4 of chapter 15 of volume 1 of Marx's Capital. And you get two reactions when you do that. One of them is to think, God, the spectre has come in the room. And there's a sort of nervousness about, oh, God, you know, this is not good for my career to be seen with, you know, maybe saying Marx said something interesting. That's the first thing that happened. The second is to look at you as if you're an idiot, because all you do is go around parroting Marx. And even worse, in this case, you're parroting a footnote. I mean, so that's a second kind of reaction. But I thought it was a pity we didn't have a further discussion of it, and I thought about it since, and I've been trying to write a little bit about it since. And I think when we think about a new city, then maybe those are the dimensions we should be thinking about, and we should be thinking about those, as I call it, sort of moments of how a city, and none of them are independent of each other, but none of them are determined by the others either. So there's an independence, if you like, of the movement of the mental conceptions, the relation to nature or the social relations. But you also have to think of it as something that's organic, that is, the city gets transformed as maybe one of these elements changes and puts pressure on the others, and there's blockages of the others. And so, if you like, just think about the city in this kind of very abstract way. Here I am being abstract, right? In a very abstract way as somehow or other something that's organically growing and has to have room to grow. And I think one of the big problems about sort of urban planning and urban thinking, urban design, is to think of something that's fixed instead of thinking something that has the capacity to evolve. Which then brings us back to, if you like, looking at contemporary cities. When we look at them, we should be asking those questions, evaluative questions. What's going on here in terms of relation to nature? What's here about social relations? And how can we think about transforming things? And what is interesting when you go back and you read the chapter on machinery and modern industry in Capital is you see what Marx is doing is talking about a long process of transformation from late medieval period through to the capitalist period, in which each one of those moves at a certain point. You will see him talking about the way in which mental conceptions had to change. You see him talking about, well, the technologies obviously are changing, but the social relations are changing. The role of mental labor versus physical labor is shifting. And also, of course, many other aspects, all of them are changing. And it seems to me that if you're going to talk about a process of social transformation, we often think, well, it's all about storming the Winter Palace. Whereas what Marx is talking about there is a long process over 100 years, 200 years of real serious kind of movement of these elements. And I think what we should be doing when we're kind of thinking about the right to the city is thinking about how we can imagine a city in such a way, understand its dimension, all of those different dimensions of it, and then think about the gradual transformation of this and that. And this, you know, people get very upset when you kind of say, well, that's the revolutionary mode, is to think about the gradual transformation of those elements and the co-evolution of those elements into a different kind of dynamic, a different kind of design. And if the objective is to create fundamentally different social relations, that is, to abolish the relations of class and to move to a different kind of pattern of social relations, then you cannot do that without transforming all of those other elements. That is, what are the technologies that are consistent with that? What is the relation to nature that's consistent with that? What kind of production systems? What kind of daily life and so on? So you look at all of those and you say, we've got to move with all of those. Now, it's really interesting when you look at a lot of social theory. There's a lot of determinism around in social theory that chooses one of those elements as being key. I mean, you have technological determinism, sort of the Tom Friedman, and sometimes Marx is called erroneously called a technological determinist. You have the social relations determinism that says it's all a product of class struggle or gender struggle or something of that kind. You have even right now kind of notions that somehow or other it's out of daily life that all the revolutionary impulses are going to arise and that therefore that is the site, the key site of radical transformations. And then you have those who are kind of saying, well, there's a geographical determinism at work here, an environmental determinism. So actually there's a lot of ways in which you suddenly find people start to latch onto one of these as if it's the answer. And I think one of the ways we have to think about a city, and that's why I think thinking about cities is so interesting, is you don't think about it, you know, a city is a very complex environment. But if we can break it down in those sorts of terms, we can start to talk about a movement of the right to the city that actually thinks about all of those dimensions and tries to concentrate on this one now and the next one there and recognize that many of the alliances that have to be built on the ground are going to have to be alliances between people who are focusing on one or other of those elements. That is, the daily life issue is a very crucial issue. Many people are concerned with that. The environmental issue, how can we make compatible the environmental with the daily life kind of questions and the social relations questions and the production questions. So it seems to me that actually if we started to think about all of those elements as they work together and thought about the city as an urbanization process, as something that is going on over time, then we might be in a better situation to start to think about the actual dynamics of social and political and technical kind of transformations which are going to be required in order for us to exert some kind of notion of a right to the city as a collective endeavor through which we're going to kind of create a different kind of urban world. So let me leave it there, and thanks very much.
Thank you, David. Next up is Roger Kyle from York.